The group is called Double Dragon.
Okay, because I'm looking at this article about China connected APT-41 likely behind attacks on airlines or CETA. And then what I'm hearing also is you guys are talking about how some Malaysians may be involved, how there's like a what's happening here. And then now you're saying also there's Double Dragon. What's all the connection between all of this?
Welcome to the Security Lab Podcast.
Okay, so Double Dragon, aka APT-41, aka Barium, aka Winty, aka Wicked Panda, aka Wicked Spider, aka Bronze Atlas, aka Red Kelpie, aka Backfly. Wow, they have so many names, right? They have been attributed to China as an advanced persistent group. Now, this group has been having a run-in with a lot of Asian countries because they focus on espionage as well as individual financial gain. So their modus operandi is, if I can make money, I make money. If I can't make money, then let me do some espionage and find out further information. The initial report on APT-41 shows that they targeted telecommunications specifically in Malaysia, Singapore, India, Indonesia, and a few other countries around Asia. So which means that they've been actively going around hacking all these operations within Asia. So Asia seems to be one of their huge, aka, customer base.
What are some of the common tools, or is there any patterns in the tradecraft?
They like to use passive backdoors as compared to the traditional one. So the traditional one is you have a port open and you gain access to it. Passive is slightly different. It's already pre-connected back to the server and you already have access into whichever network there is. This technique is especially useful, especially when you have network address translations. So network address translation essentially is you have all these multiple computers behind a single gateway sharing one single public IP address. So as a result, you can't map your TCP ports directly out because there's a translation that happens in the gateway. When you use passive connection, what happens is an infected machine connects outward into the hacker's command and control server, which means that once this machine is quote unquote owned, it establishes a connection to the C2 server. And from the C2 server, you can issue commands to this machine and let it execute whatever you want it to execute. And how the clients get infected is the usual means is spear phishing emails. They go into sites like LinkedIn, identify who are the staffs, harvest their email address to forums and all other sites, send them targeted emails with malware ridden Office documents or PDF documents, and from there, try to gain a foothold into the organization.
I know that they have been charged in connection with more than 100 victims globally. But recently, there is an incident with them on live streaming. If I recall it correctly, I read that it's something called BioPass Rat. That's a malware.
Yep, you're absolutely right. It's a rat. So a rat is a remote access Trojan. This group, they customize their tools. So there are some groups which what they do is they take something that's already out in the open. Say a security researcher builds a rat, poison rat, example, right? Now, when you use that, you can't attribute back into a specific group because many other groups may use poison rat as well. But this particular group, what they do is they build their own toolkits, which is why if you look at the docket on APT41, you see a whole long list of tools which has unique names because every time they put a tool out, a customer discovers it. Guess what? It's burnt. It can't be used anymore. We now have the indicator of compromise. It can be in a form of a hash, or we can reverse engineer it and see what the code does. And from there, identify similar malware, and we can zoom in and actually catch those kind of processes running in a machine.
Well, if what you've described is, it seems very sophisticated to me, and it makes it very hard to detect. So what are some of the indicators of attack that have enabled all these known attributions that we read of?
It's usually because someone finds that the network is not behaving in a certain manner that they feel is a normal operation. So for example, if someone is exfiltrating large amounts of data out of the network, then at the gateway or at the router, you suddenly find that the traffic going out of the network spikes. And when that spike happens, you now identify that, hey, why is this traffic going out? You know, what is it doing? So for example, one of the tools that were used by APT41 is a commercial tool called TeamViewer. So TeamViewer allows you to have fully remote access into machines. So when you look at network traffic analysis of networks, if your organization doesn't use a software called TeamViewer, then you should be alarmed to see that, hey, why is there a whole large chunk of traffic that's going out to TeamViewer? Something is wrong. That's an indicator of an organization actually being compromised. Because, for example, traffic is clearly out of whack when you look at the kind of information that comes in and out of the organization.
So from what you have just described, so if those are the indicators of attack that you've just described, right? Would they have any of those specific telltale signs that are at the low level, such as the hashes and the IPs and all those things, since, you know, the tools are available, readily available, and it's very, very hard to pinpoint based on those figures, isn't it? Those information.
Specifically for APT41, they build their own tools, which means that the hash that you get is as fresh as it gets, which means that they cannot reuse their tools. And if they do, it's much more easier for you to discover. So for example, I can load up a whole set of APT41 IOCs. It can be IP addresses, it can be file hashes, and I can run it through my whole organization, do a broad sweep, aka threat hunting, to see if any of my machines that's in within my organization having those properties. And that would give you an indication of whether they have already set foot in your organization or not. These groups, they just work like any other organization or companies. They target a certain organization. If they get access, they may either immediately capitalize on it, or they may say, it's okay, I'm just going to let my malware sit and settle there, leave it running. And when I have a certain mission I need to do in a particular country, then let me go into that set of IP addresses. Let me do whatever exfiltration I need to do, pull out the data. Or if I have access to a bank, then let me try to get access into their SWIFT system so that I can make financial transfer, like what happened to Bangladesh Bank before.
What I'm just glancing through this article about APT41, which Sky shared. And Doc, the way you described it, this group sounds to be pretty careful, as in you said that they use the freshest tools, they use as fresh as possible tools, right, to ensure that they were not detected or caught. But somehow, FBI has them on their list that they've actually named and even have the pictures of five perpetrators or allegedly members of this APT 41. Is this something which is common, whereby they maybe did everything they can to not get caught, but they've been identified anyway?
Yes. It's because of... See, bad guys make mistakes. Because why? They're humans. Humans make mistakes. Bad guys are humans. Hence, bad guys make mistakes. Right? So, what happens is, when they make mistakes, we catch on to it. So, for example, if I use a certain email address to register a domain that I use to set up as a waterhole attack, now I should ensure that I do not contaminate that email address by using it for my personal use. If I go and take that email address and I register it to buy Pokemons and I register myself in the forum, essentially I've tied a username with that email in a forum, in a domain. And you can see the links that's happening just by using that email address.
It was what happened to Dark Basin, right? They got
exactly
identified that way.
They got caught because of cross-contamination. Some of the things that we share with activists and all that, do not cross-contaminate. So if you have anything that you're doing on activism, you shouldn't let that be together with your personal life, because otherwise, you know, you get linked and you get busted. Same thing with the bad guys, right? It takes a lot of discipline for you to actually ensure that whatever negative tradecraft that you're doing does not interfere into your personal life. The link comes in when there's cross contamination of these two personas. So sometimes what they do is they use the same user ID, and using the same user ID, we look through all the forums and we find out, you're here, you're here, you're here, you're here. That gives info into more things. So for example, one of the user IDs were found putting a paper as part of his bachelor's degree on remote access, for example. So now we know he studied in this university. Yeah. And in that paper, he reveals his full name. Boom. That's how you find out. Of course, there may be other counter-hacking activities that the law enforcement may do for them to actually gain access into the C2 servers and find out who's accessing these C2 servers. That can also happen.
Thank goodness for that.
One of the main reasons, I think, they are easier caught now is probably because over the last 2 to 3 years, there have been a rise of threat intel platforms and threat intel feeds that are feeding. You know, those early days, it's not easy to correlate some of the information or the reuse of emails or the linkage of various indicators in different places. Today, you put in a platform, you have like 20 to 30 open source feeds coming in, and you basically is like, you know, remember Professor X, not Professor X, listening to all these conversations that are out there and trying to draw a correlation. So it's not as easy as the early years where they can make a mistake and, you know, quickly erase it. No, today it is kept in the platform. So this is one of the reasons, I guess.
You have beautifully described cyber threat intelligence. Beautiful description. Thank you, Sky.
Enjoying the show so far? Subscribe now so that you don't miss out on the latest episode. We are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many other platforms. Visit podcast.securitylaw.asia to get the links to subscribe.
So that's exactly how we track these bad guys. Of course, there are also the law enforcement part who tracks this, and people who own these kind of platforms, there's a number of them, they have access to this information. And based on this information, you can load this up in as indicators of compromise. You can then do a threat hunt in your organization to see if your organization is affected.
Okay. I have you mentioned about somehow the use of technology that helps it and threat intel platforms that makes it easier to identify and see the linkages and relationships between different attacks and all that, right? But conversely, the same can be said for the bad guys. They can actually automate their processes and their operations. So maybe in the case for APT 41, they did not do so, but the time may come when the bad guys do so. So how do you foresee that panning out?
I'm very sure they already have access to tools. For example, the malware that they create has evasion techniques specifically for certain antivirus or EDR or MDR or XDR or whatever you call it, Asterisk DR, right? They can buy these commercial tools and they can test it out in their labs, test out evasion techniques, and actually built it into their software. They are already doing it today. That is why the good guys, when we publish indicators of compromise, we use something called the traffic light protocol. So essentially, traffic light protocol is red, amber, green, and white. White means consumable for everyone. If you're sharing an information under TLP red, it's only meant for the recipient, which means that someone has found certain new IOCs that are very fresh, but they don't want the bad guys to know. So it's only shared within a certain level of group that is highly confidential. And this group keeps that information so that they can track and see if the bad guys are in their network without the bad guys knowing that the good guys are onto them. You see, it's an interesting conundrum because I've worked in such organizations. And one of the decisions I have to make is that I know these bad guys are here. Number one, do I boot them out immediately and restore sanctity to my network? Or number two, do I observe, see what extent that they have gone to, and then build in the kill switch? Most often, a lot of organizations will say, get them out now. But the problem with that approach is that, yes, you are killing what you see, but you don't know what else that they have access into.
Exactly.
You close one door, there may be three other doors that are open.
Yeah,
which is why a lot of organizations need to have that patience, that perseverance to say that I want to see how bad the situation actually is, instead of jumping into the fray and saying, let's kill this off and let's get it done over with.
Yeah,
you will miss that three doors that are open if you only catch this one.
Yeah,
and the only way you're going to know that these three doors are open is if you observe what the adversaries are doing. And the one thing that I'd like to promote is that today, being blue team is actually very difficult. Dealing with all this APT 41 guys is not going to be easy, right? But the problem is we are making it easy for them and we are making it expensive for us. You know why? They can come into any networks. They'll just go hop onto any other machines. Boom. They're straight into your core. We don't have technologies that we put in today like decoys or a dumb machine where we want them to attack that machine. And when you do, I know you're an attacker and I know who you are. So these are what we call as honeypots.
Yep.
You know, I can embed a credential into an Active Directory login script and I just comment it out so it doesn't work. Any attacker who's going to go into the network, the first thing they're going to see is, are there going to be logon scripts in the machine? Let me go and harvest some credentials. And the minute they fire that, you know they're in the network. You can zoom in and you can catch them. The problem is we spend too much of time trying to put a huge wall in front of us, whereas we don't put all these honeypots in the network for us to be able to nail them inside the network.
No.
Because the thinking that you need to put into this process is they are in your network today, right now, jumping between machines. How do you find that out?
Well,
that's the kind of mindset that we need at the blue team level, at the defense level, in order for us to say, okay, now I'm going to make it difficult for the bad guys because they won't know which is a legitimate machine, which is a honeypot. And if they step on the wrong machine, kaboom. You know, it's like those landmines that you put in the Vietnamese war. If you happen to walk on the wrong side of the forest, you may no longer be alive.
What do you think, Sky and Prof? To me, it sounds like the art of war, cybersecurity version.
Actually, it is. I think one day we must ask Professor to help us to develop some comparison between cybersecurity and the Sun Tzu art of war. I know there are already a lot of books being written, but I want to share with you guys an experience that I had recently. I was presenting to a team of the board of directors of a bank. And my first statement was, I know you like for us to quickly resolve your issues and kick all these perpetrators out, but I would recommend that you wait. And you can see those eyebrows, you know, coming down and, you know, and I was sharing with them, because this is a local bank. So I was talking to them in Malay and I said, this is exactly like the pakcik in a kampong who knew that there are three snakes at the back of the house of the pondok. And he managed to see one snake. Does he go and immediately try and catch that snake? Or does he wait and see where the other two snakes are? So I said, just like what Doc have said just now, you need to know the entire visibility of the scenario before you take action. You got to plan your incident response plan very, very carefully so that at the end, you win. You don't win just a battle, but you want to win the entire war, you know. And you want to be able to wait and look where these guys are because they were attacked by crypto miners, which was WannaMine. Now, even though it is a crypto miner, it actually come from the family of WannaCry. In other words, it has a very strong capability of switching into WannaCry and lock down all your machines. You know, so they wanted us to, you know, the initial one from the IT team was quickly help us to, you know, remove those, you know, WannaMines. And we were saying, no, let's take a look. Where did it start? Where was the source? Is there any foulest process that we have missed out? We need to highlight all the issues. So the whole thing about all these APT attacks are, when you are hit, you need to be able to have the visibility of the scenario, crafting out a proper incident response plan before you go in and take the fact to them. Because you will be you otherwise you get into a battle that you cannot win, you know, and it gets worse.
Sun Tzu Art of War says that you go into a battle knowing that you will win.
Yeah.
Otherwise, do not go into the battle.
Correct. So I think the lessons learned here was, you know, for me, we need to know who we are up against, what we are up against, and what's the current scenario of the battleground. Otherwise, going and jumping into it, I've seen many players, even cybersecurity organizations, going in, and they just say, "Hey, okay, you've got three machines locked down. Let me come in and help you to decrypt and work on these three machines." And I say, "Hey guys, you're doing it all wrong. you're trying to put off the fire, but there could be flames, little flames all over the place."
Yeah, I think you summed it up very well, Sky. The feature of APT41 that made it interesting into this podcast was because they were targeting Southeast Asia specifically. And we wanted to bring to light the activities of these group and to give our listeners a perspective into how this group operates and for you to gain further information so that you can better protect your own organization.
Thanks for joining us this week on Security Lab. Make sure to visit our website at securitylab.asia, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS so you'll never miss a show.